We're back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. You're hearing two white-handed gibbons at the Racine Zoo. It's a father-daughter pair named Yule and Robin. Gibbons are small apes with black fur and white feet and hands, and they look like monkeys with no tails. Gibbons are known for a diverse repertoire of sounds, including what you just heard, the introductory notes to a territorial call. Carthage College biology professor Angela Dassow is studying the gibbons' sounds in order to find out the meaning behind them. WUWM's Mayon Silver met her at the zoo to learn more.
Our research, in a nutshell, is a Dr. Doolittle type of research. So we were trying to figure out what exactly it is the gibbons are really saying to one another. We wouldn't refer to it as language, per se, because it doesn't have the same types of properties that human languages have. But we do call it a communication system because there is some information that is being transferred between individuals. So my interest in this is trying to figure out what exactly that information is, and how do we recreate that to be able to communicate with a gibbon. So I look at the individual units of sounds that are being produced. That's similar to phonemes in human languages, and then the sequence of those sounds to look for patterns and see what kind of associations there can be between a specific behavior type and a sequence of sounds. To date, we've been able to find sequences of sounds that are associated with different predator warnings. So they have a sequence of sounds that they produce when they see a clouded leopard, and then a completely different sequence when they see a tiger that's been sitting versus a tiger that's been running. They have a different sequence for when they see a reticulated python. Our captive ones here actually have a little warning call for their veterinarian. And the other captive group that I'm working with is at the Henry Valley Zoo in Madison, and they have a warning for the Goodyear blimp. They don't like that one.
How were you able to tell what the different, like, what was, maybe can we go over and see them a little bit?
Yeah. So we can tell what the meanings are as we can induce different studies or experimental setups where we actually put a clouded leopard out in front of a group of gibbons and wait for them to vocalize towards it. Do the same thing with the other predator types. The Goodyear blimp actually just happened on accident. I was working at the Henry Valley Zoo recording those gibbons a few years ago, and the badgers were playing and happened to be that the Goodyear blimp flew over the zoo to be able to get to the stadium to record the game, and the gibbons saw it, and I happened to be there with my recording equipment, so that triggered their vocalizations. When other aerial objects were present, the gibbons did not respond. So we can associate that sequence of sounds that they were producing was something related to the Goodyear blimp. I wouldn't say that it was a specific meaning of this is Goodyear blimp, because certainly the gibbons wouldn't know what that is, but it's an association between that sequence and then an object.
So what would be something that they would say, like right now it's kind of like, you know, beginning of the morning, they're back in their enclosure, they're kind of looking for food, they're hanging out. What kind of communication would they have?
There's two main types of communication that they'll have here this morning. One, which we've heard a little bit of already, is just a general territorial call. They do this every single morning. Gibbons in the wild will do this every single morning as well. And it's just an announcement that this is my personal area, and nobody else should come in. Gibbons are a territorial species, so it's really important that they actually do spend a little time every day alerting others that they are still present in the area and still actively defending an area. Even though there's no other gibbons at the zoo and really no one to defend this against, that's part of an innate behavior that they will persist throughout their lives. The other type of sound that we will hopefully hear this morning and is part of our immediate study this summer is a play vocalization. So this is a very different type of sound than the rest of the gibbons' vocal repertoire. It sounds actually a lot more like a sheep bleat, so it's more of a And this type of sound is used specifically when the gibbons are engaged in play activity, where they're kind of rolling around, grabbing onto each other's feet and hands, and kind of jabbing and swatting at each other. At a certain point in time, it gets a little bit more of a rough play behavior, and that is when this bleeding sound comes out. So we're trying to capture those vocalizations in particular, since we've never been able to record those in the wild. It's a really, really quiet sound. We just can't get close enough to the gibbons playing in the wild to be able to get this. So it's kind of one of our next pieces of the gibbon communication puzzle, to figure out what they're saying to one another and getting a full picture of their communication systems.
So what is this gibbons communication puzzle like?
The puzzle itself is just trying to understand how they communicate and how many similarities they might have to us and how many differences there are. In the broader picture, I'd also like to be able to compare this species of gibbons with the other 15 species. It's a very ambitious project, so that's going to take decades to do, but it would help us to be able to understand what the evolution of the communication system is in gibbons. Since there are so many different species, it is actually advantageous to be able to compare these different groups. There's four different genera, so four different types of gibbon groups themselves. So understanding what differences and similarities between them would open up some pictures and evolutionary perspectives.
And what does this show about how humans developed a complex communication system?
So there are some similarities that we're already seeing in terms of what acoustic properties they share. One of the things I found in grad school is that there is some co-articulation in the vocalizations, which means that they're already thinking about what the next sound is going to be. And that's a level of cognition that not all species possess. So that tells us a little bit more about how closely related their system is to us. It also is very helpful in terms of the broader picture of all species of communication systems. So we have a lot of people who work on cetacean research. Those are whales and dolphins. There's a lot of bird researchers out there. Frog communication, turtle communication is becoming very popular, because turtles actually do make a lot of vocalizations underwater. And so we're just trying to understand where everyone fits in terms of how similar and different they are from humans.
And what's new about your research that hasn't been done on ape or monkey or gorilla research yet?
So most of the gorilla research is going to be gestural communication, whereas what we look at here is vocal communication. But we're not so much interested in making sure that our research is really different from monkey communication and ape communication. With the lesser apes, we're just adding in another piece of the puzzle. So it's actually advantageous to be able to find some similarities between monkeys, great apes, and lesser apes, because that opens up a window of how this all developed over time. So one of the things that we will be looking for in our wild gibbons is whether or not there's any kind of dialectical variation. So we obviously have dialectical variation in human languages, but it's also been discovered in a species of monkey. I suspect that we will be able to find some dialectical variation in lesser apes, but we still have to go out and record and analyze all of that yet.
What is the most interesting discovery that you've made?
I think the most interesting discovery that I made, besides the co-articulation effect in gibbons, is that they're producing both motivational and referential sounds. So motivational sequences would be similar to an excited utterance. So if I startled you right now and you gasped, that's not a word, but it is a sound that would indicate that you were startled. So gibbons actually do produce those, and it's sort of the first sequence of sounds that they will produce. Gibbons will also produce those. The referential sequence.
There's something flying above us.
Yes, I know, I distracted there for a moment. Robin is brachiating across the enclosure, perhaps looking for some more items to forage on.
Looking for some more jean shorts.
Yes, more jean shorts time. But the other aspect that we found is the referential aspect. So They, in fact, do have all these additional sequences of sounds that really do have meaning. And in addition to my collaborator, Dr. Esther Clark, who's at MIT right now, we collectively so far have been able to find these different patterns in wild predators, as well as what would be considered maybe a captive threat situation, like a veterinarian and Goodyear blimp.
So what was the co-articulation in a nutshell? Is that when you see something and then you articulate about it?
The co-articulation just means that when you are producing a sound and thinking about the next sound that you're going to produce, your mouth and tongue is actually already moving to the position that it needs to be in to be able to produce that next sound. So you actually see a little bit of a different ending to the initial sound because of the second sound that's being produced.
I see. Okay, so it's like stringing together ideas via sounds.
Right, exactly. And that just means that they're already thinking ahead on what's happening next, whereas there are a lot of species that it's producing very discrete sounds, and then the next discrete sound is produced, and they don't actually interact with one another. Oh, they're starting to play right now. So what's happening here is they're grabbing each other's arms, and their feet are going to lock together. There's going to be a little bit of teeth baring eventually, and then this bleat is going to come out. So this is something that's a bonding activity. We did normally only see this with an infant and the parents. Robin is a very old lady to still be playing with her dad, but because they've been housed together their entire lives, they still engage in this activity. And so she'll go back and forth. Normally she's the one that initiates this behavior, but he can also initiate it. They'll lock together for a little bit, then they'll release, and she might do some grooming, and then the play activity picks up again.
It almost looks like they're sort of mellow right now, like massaging, like one of them is massaging the other one almost.
They are. So Robin right now is actually grooming her father, and she'll continue to do this for a little bit. They will likely get back into that play behavior fairly quickly. Sometimes, though, they don't. So one of the questions that we still have is, you know, why do some of these play bouts only last a few seconds? Why do some last several minutes? What is leading up to this behavior? Because it happens at all different times of day. So we're just trying to figure out how this behavior fits in with the rest of the behaviors.
What are any other questions that you're still looking to find out?
So in addition to this, we're looking at whether or not there's dialectical variation involved. We're also interested in knowing what other kind of potential information could be coded within the vocalization. So some of my students and I right now are looking at onset times of different calls. So how much time does it take from the beginning of a call bout to the first great call? So we're looking at durations of songs. And then we started looking a little bit more now at gestural behavior. Even though gibbons are mostly a vocal species, there is some gestures that they use, and that could potentially have some communicative value that we are interested in figuring out.
WUWM's Mayan Silver spoke with Professor Angela Dassow at the Racine Zoo. There's more information about her work with gibbons at WUWM.com.